Hey everybody, and welcome back to the FFS podcast with me, Pete Coombs. And this is the second part of our conversation with Trent Bush, the founder of Arcollect Clothing, where he talks more about the creation of brands, working for Burton. We sort of get into the nitty-gritty of why people feel like it's fine to spend a lot of money on a snowboard, but yet the piece of kit which is the most integral to getting them up the mountain, which is actually themselves, they seem more reluctant to part with the folding cash on good quality clothing, and would sometimes skimp on the clothing just to get that new set of bindings or new set of boots. Anyway, it's an interesting take. If you haven't listened to the first part, then you really should go back. Trent's history in the founding of snowboarding, as we know it today, is a super, super interesting story. He's a Boulder, I'm not sure where that is, a Boulder, Colorado resident. And the scene was really kicking there back in the 80s and 90s, as it is today, in fact. Anyway, just before we continue with our conversation with Trent, I just wanted to remind you that we do have a workshop running in the High Marion Valley of France this year. It's in February. It's 4 days on the snow, 3 evenings, workshop sort of slash classroom based evenings, and hopefully we'll get up for a night in the hut, but it is on snow for 4 days, and we'll be learning how one should start and plan and execute a tour. So it's aimed at those who've not been splitboarding before and want to get out there, and it's also aimed at those that have possibly been out with other people making the decisions or with guides, and they're looking to get out there on their own. Anyway, there's limited to 6 places, 3 of which have sold so far. I think 4 actually maybe have gone now. So there's 2 or 3 places. We can open it up to a slightly large group, but we'd have to get another guide involved. But we've teamed up with Fred from Up Guides, and it's going to be a super cool few days. So if anybody fancies joining us, then please do. Anyway, sit back and we'll rejoin the conversation with Trent Bush from Arcollect Clothing, and myself, Pete Coombs, and Zach Emerson from the crew. Enjoy.
Sort of the question about Burton and all that, and you know, was it hard to go into something like that? Where was it totally different? And Burton was completely different than our world. There were aspects of it that were in the world, certain riders and stuff that kind of dipped into our world a little bit, it felt like. But, you know, going there, in my mind, what we had already sort of, what we were doing, because Burton was East Coast and in its own little bubble or big bubble, we were progressing significantly faster. You know, the kids on the street were progressing way faster than any big brand at that point. And so going in there, it was actually kind of exciting because we had the opportunity to make anything because they had so much scale. And at that point, there wasn't a whole lot of anything cool coming out of the ski side or the outdoor side. And most of the most progressive stuff was actually, we had the ability at Burton to make literally anything, any fabric, any combination of fabrics. We had a broad spectrum of team riders. We, you know, Craig Kelly, of course, you know, we had AK. We were able to make his clothes exactly what he wanted based on our experience and our true snowboard experience and those iterations of the years. And then we were able to do the same thing for Terrier, and we were able to do the same thing for Sean White, who was like 12, you know, or 13. He had a brand called Project 13 through Burton. But what for us, my brother and I, and especially as you know, just to answer the other question of were we crushed when Twist ended, we working with Jeffy Anderson and Trevor Andrew, Jason Brown, just a number of really influential early writers, we started that brand Analog. Mm-hmm. And Analog was really just Twist Part Two in so many ways, because Burton had all these different, you know, they had Universe, and that was Terry and Dave Downing's thing, and they had Craig Kelly and AK. Everybody had this little segment of each of these different lines, depending on their writing style and sort of their marketing approach. But there was nothing that was no rules. Everything else had tons of rules. And I think what Jake's best contribution to snowboarding was, besides all the stuff he did personally, was that he would really listen to the riders and let the riders say what they wanted. And when there was that small group of riders who didn't have that next level of stuff that they wanted, he, you know, we kind of went rogue and actually made samples and did all kinds of stuff. But when it came to be, he listened to them and let us all kind of start the, you know, that brand, which then became a real progressive driver in snowboarding. So all those years from Wave Rave to Twist to, you know, and to Burton, that all sort of came together with being able to take all that and try to package it for Burton in a way that they weren't necessarily doing. So that was super, you know, that was super exciting. And it was, you know, for me personally, and not having any ego in it, but just we felt the version of snowboarding we were doing was the right one. And it turns out, you know, now looking at where the snowboard industry is, yeah, it actually was right that it was rider driven, passion driven, DIY, no rules, you know, this to everybody. And it's kind of turned out that way. And that's, again, bringing it full circle again, that's now anybody who loves snowboarding can find a path of what is their version of it. And they can, you know, again, find your podcast, the microcosms of this great thing that we all do, and really dive wholeheartedly into, you know, they could, or the most boutique-y, obscure Japanese snowboard maker, or, you know, my friends, the Moonchild guys, you know, all these different little brands and all these different things exist in this big world now, and there's equal access to all of them. And so it's really, really exciting. And that is sort of the next wave. It's where we started, riders driving it. That's the, you know, in my mind, that's the future, and it keeps reinventing itself. And it's the media, and it's the product, and it's the apparel, and it's whatever it is. It's like, it's always driven by the riders, and that's why it's always kind of vibrant and exciting.
Yeah, it's really interesting you say that on a couple of points. So when there's a sort of associated rider with a product, I always think, I wonder if they've just put his name on it, or if he's had any feedback at all. You know, they just sort of branded a glove. Oh, you know, if you like
sometimes,
that man, you're going to buy it. I wouldn't be surprised.
It depends. Then, you know, I think it just depends on the... Go ahead and finish. I'm sorry.
Well, no, cool. And then on the second point, you were just saying about sort of equipment and niches and stuff. I mean, it's... I find it quite astounding myself that I've got like a really small, independent Swedish snowboard manufacturer, and I'm riding their board now, Strander Snowboards, bigging them up because I just love what he's doing.
Yeah.
Matt's. And then I've got Phantom from the little guy in, you know, in his garage in Colorado, who's developing his bindings like a NASA space engineer.
Absolutely.
You know,
and then I love Amplid, so big up Amplid.
Yeah.
Boards.
Of course.
Again, a small manufacturer doing some cool things.
Yeah. And you guys are riding some ski boots, right? Doesn't somebody pull through?
I've got the K2, not K2, sorry, what am I talking about? Key Equipment, which is a hard,
exactly.
Boot. Yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, and again, there you go. So, the first question, riders just putting their names on stuff. Yes, that's happened. But, of course, you know, at least in my experience, the better outcomes are always when the riders are super involved. And most of them want to be, of course, because they have to ride it, right? And it needs to kind of really fit their riding style and let them excel and do what they're absolutely best at. You know, that going back again, I mean, you look at the true pioneers, the Tom Sims or Chuck Barfoot or Dimitri or Jake or, you know, they were hands-on, and that was iterative, right? Jake in particular wrote every piece of clothing we made and would send feedback on everything, pocket placement, zippers. Like it was kind of wild. You know, there are a lot of team writers that do the same thing. I mean, when we left Burton, I started another brand. I mean, that's just kind of my curse, just starting brands. I started a brand called Section with Mark Frank Montoya. And that was primarily because of snowboarding at that point. There were a lot of people just putting names and things on, and it became this sort of big business, and it had kind of gotten away from where riders were actually really influencing the product. And so that was a chance to get back to the roots again and really work hand in hand with some top riders to create exactly based on the evolutions of materials and things that existed to really bring that back to where snowboarding was this huge giant thing, but not every product was actually that great for snowboarding. And so again, it was an opportunity to sort of bring that back. So people like Mark, I worked with him later on snowboards and bindings, and they're deeply involved. You know, if you look at like Jeremy Jones, like with Jones snowboards and that kind of thing, I mean, of course he's so deeply involved. Any, you know, Blue and Capita and George at Union, and they're just, there are people who maybe they're not pros anymore, but they know what's going on, right? And they're putting the passion and all that kind of stuff in. So yeah, I mean, those are the ways that the better equipment is developed. And again, we're kind of back to that now where there aren't that many brands anymore. And so the brands, you know, you mentioned, and the microcosms again of snowboarding in those directions down to Phantom, of course, that's just a whole different, it's a whole different thing. And that's when you pull it back to splitboarding in particular, and even just shaped snowboards. I mean, we got caught in the true twin decades, it felt like, where everything had to be a true twin. Everything had to be some sort of modification of camber. And there was a long time in there, driven by a number of factors like park snowboarding, that kind of thing. But now, and especially when it comes back to splitboarding, you know, splitboarding wasn't that fun for a long time, because the equipment just wasn't good. And just in the last couple of years, where people are really having that opportunity to go in and do the R&D, has it become really fun? It was funky and not that fun before. It was like riding a Frankenstein thing, and you knew it was Frankenstein, right?
We've had so much stuff break apart, you know, in like back here from Kyrgyzstan or like Georgia border or whatever, and you're just like, oh my God, you know, I don't want to slag any brands off, but you know, yeah, there's stuff that doesn't work.
Well, it's just, you know, people always ask, you know, why is splitboarding not at the level of backcountry skiing? And there's a number of reasons, but equipment, right? In so many ways. And so that's the exciting part now. I mean, if you know, again, go back to Phantom, go back to Will at Spark R&D, go back to these people that they've had to sort of find their way and trial and error what we did in you know, snowboards decades ago, and snow, like, you know, traditional snowboards and bindings and boots and that kind of thing. A lot of that learning curve was 20 years ago. Things haven't progressed that much, except for new cool shapes and stuff. But on the splitboard side, we're kind of at the front end of the innovation curve, where now it's at a baseline of just being pretty damn good. And now it can go, it can become great, I feel. But that's not easy and effortless. It takes time, takes seasons with snow and resources to go out and really try those things.
But and it takes use, doesn't it? It takes use and feedback. I mean, we've had, Zach said he didn't want to mention any names, but we had a lot of Spark ski crampons, you know, break basically. Yeah. They're just snapping. And those things, you know, you're in a no fall zone. Those things need to work. And they just literally, they had like a 2-point weld. They made change it to a 4-point weld, and now they're bomber.
But you know what? Good on them for giving them to you in the first place, because nobody else was, right?
What Will has done,
it's like to take
and we wrote to them balls, and stuff, and they wrote back, which is cool.
Yeah, to have the balls to build a factory and make board bindings? Yeah. Like, seriously, like, who's going to do that, right? And there's a couple people that did, and unfortunately, we all are the R&D in certain points. You know, they can't be out in every every condition, and some of those things where you think two is sufficient, you know, nope, needs four. But you know, that's all part of being part of something new. I mean, we all have to do our part and not be, you know, pissed off and shitty about it. We have to give them the honest feedback. I've gotten stuck out there in many times, and you know, using my valise straps to hold my shit back together.
Yeah.
And cursing the name of the person I know who made my stuff all the way back. But then being like, you know what, that doesn't help anything. Like, here's what would help. Hit them up, tell them what happened, how it happened, the conditions, and guess what? Next year they're gonna have four welds instead of two. And that's what has to happen, especially at this sort of formative time of splitboarding. And I think a lot of people don't understand how new splitboarding truly is, and especially how new good splitboarding truly is, and good splitboards. And you know, it's decades, not even decades old, you know, at this point. I mean, splitboarding in general isn't even, I mean, it was early 90s, you know. And then in 15 years, maybe, or more of not great trial and error. And then we've been in the last 10 years of things really starting to ramp up because the market's climbed and the desire for people to go out and try to make it something has gone up. And so, you know, what will it be in 10 years? It's going to be epic.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see.
It's going to be super interesting.
Really interesting to see. I mean, I don't know if you can see behind me on the wall there, I've got an atomic split board, one of the first ones that were made.
Yeah.
It was, when I was changing the bindings on that, it sounded like I was doing some cooking. You know, there was aluminium and I was clanging away and they had to get the cramp out and twist dials, and it was absolutely shite.
And the pins, you know, the pin binding.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
No, totally. And you, non-reliable would be an understatement, but non-reliable would be the piece that would make you just put it away for a couple of years and come back when you think it got better, you know? And so for me, I admittedly did that, you know, it wasn't fully baked and we have access to so much stuff here. And there was the whole, you know, all the passes and snowmobiles and all that stuff that you can do here. It was so much of a chore and it was so low performance on the up that it wasn't enjoyable. Now I'll go out and I love the up. Literally, I think I love the up as much as I love the down, which is kind of crazy because it that solitude and that again, that sense of adventure that I haven't had in snowboarding in particular, especially as the world has gotten so crowded and here in particular, to be able to just be out there in solitude, it's like, it's incredible.
It's sort of almost two different sports, really, isn't it? I mean, I absolutely love lapping a lift, you know, with powder everywhere and just getting the miles in. I mean, you know, it's incredible. But then in the same break, you know, I love stepping out of a yurt in Kyrgyzstan in the morning and, you know, skinning up a deserted valley.
More like towards mountaineering, isn't it, in a way?
It is
more towards mountaineering.
No, for sure. And so, and that's, you know, and to pull it around to kind of what I do now, you know, there's, when you talk gear and you talk equipment, there's the hard goods, but my frustration over the years hasn't just been that, you know, a piece of my binding would break. It's that I'm hot, sweaty, and miserable as you're getting out there. You know, or you feel like maybe you're not safe, you're not protected, you know. There's a saying in sort of the military, it's the human, not the hardware, right? It's like, I, over my career and making apparel and snowboard specific and ski and whatever apparel, literally almost since birth, it feels like, or being born into a brand that did that with my dad, you know, that apparel hasn't kept pace and people will spend any amount of money on their setup. Like, right. I mean, you're, you're in the key equipment boots with the phantom bindings and the, you know, and you've got different skins and you'll spend any money. But a lot of people will do that, and they'll do it in bikes and they'll do it in golf clubs. They'll do it in everything. And they don't pay attention to their own body as the key piece of gear. And how do you treat the actual machine with the support and respect that it needs to actually perform better and to perform for longer and to recover faster and be able to go out and do it the next day? And that's the piece where, for me, being kind of an apparel as gear mentality person, that's the piece that's been missing from the equation, based on a number of factors, primarily just on sort of market conditions leading to everybody sort of making the same stuff. And then just sort of the way you, to be commercially viable in a space, margins and all the things, how you have to kind of make gear, which has really ended up in an entire industry of what's supposed to be the most performance driven part, the sort of, you know, hyper enabled outdoor industry, to just be sort of efficiencies and marginalized into just the same shit at the end of the day. Not that anything out there is shit. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying not their stuff is shit. It's just shit at the end of the day. It's a lot of stuff and it's all very similar. And there's very little differentiation between jacket A, jacket B, jacket C, besides placement of zippers and maybe the color, you know? Trent, and that's been a frustration for me for many years. And
that makes a lot of sense to me, because I'm really into ultra running, but mountain running. And it's always a quest to find the right gear, as you say, to protect you, because you're the machine. You have to keep going if it's a multi-day thing or just some epic like UTMB thing, whatever it is. And and it's got to be light, it's got to be efficient, it's got to pack in your bag, and it's not going to break. And you just end up trialing so many different things. And my wife's just like, what is all this stuff? And I'm like, yeah, but they all have, you know, so you almost have a splitboarding load of gear, and you have a kind of in resort gear, because if I'm doing in resort stuff, I don't want to wear out my, you know, really good stuff that's just got to work out there, that's super light. And then you have like gash gear if you're just going to kind of kick around with the kids and, you know, go sledging and be on your ass, and the same in running stuff. So it's all quite specific.
It is. And it's,
I love that. I love hearing you say that.
It's how does your body function? That's point one. How does it best function? And how does it best function in cold weather environments and the variable elements, you know? And that's the question where you've got to start. What are you trying to do? And what are you trying to do it in, right? Environmental wise. And so the outdoor industry in particular has been really built up. I mean, the outdoor industry has changed so much in the last 10, 15 years, where, and this is a joke I always say, it's like the opposite of skiing for skiers used to be golf, right? That was the deal. Like, people would ski in the winter and they would golf in the summer. But now the opposite of skiing is mountain biking and trail running. And it's doing all of those same things at the same level of intensity. You know, backcountry skiing has existed for a long time. It hasn't really been a thing, you know, say for the last 20 plus years, where it's an industry, right? And where people are going out and getting the gear and doing the thing, but building that sort of maybe aerobic output, where before it was definitely more anaerobic. You needed to sit on a lift, you needed to stay warm, you needed to get to the bottom, you needed to open your vents, not get too cold on the next lift ride up, and just repeat, right?
Yeah.
But now, again, with all those variables and the understanding of kind of human performance and what we can do to actually solve for some of that stuff, you know, it's really strange. Like, what we're doing right now with Artelect, which is the brand I founded a couple of years ago, based around this need to support the body in those with those performance outcomes. You know, we're looking at it totally different, where the industry up until this point, save for a few, you know, sort of bright spots, it's really been more protection from the outside in. It's the barrier to cold, wind, precipitation, blah, 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 blah. And yeah, it's kind of breathable. so that you know, if you do generate some heat from the inside, you're going to let it escape. You know, we all know you can overwhelm a hard shell from a moisture and heat generation perspective in about 22 seconds, right? It's like, it doesn't take long. And so, you know, what I'm trying to do now and what I'm doing with Artelect is just looking at, okay, how do we protect people, of course, on the outside? And those are known elements. You pretty much know how to handle wind or cold or precipitation in different various formats, whatever. But how can you do that? But then at the same time, you know, what's going on inside? And what's going on from the skin to that sort of barrier-ish layer? And how do you stay thermoregulated and manage moisture within that to keep your body as close to, you know, 98.6 here or 37.5, whatever, you know, keep it closest to what it can best perform at. And that's really the only goal, you know? So you're doing that from the outside in by making sure that you're not getting people, you know, they can't be too cold, they can't be too hot, whatever. But you have to do it from the inside out as well. And those two things are equally important. So that's sort of the shift we've made with Artelect, is that, you know, we have Artelect Systems, which is called ACES for short. And that's just basically, how do we put these different levels in different formats together? Not just how they fit together, but then also how do they function together in primary fabrications, but also in the secondary fabrications and targeted materials and technologies, to not, your entire body doesn't act exactly the same way. How do you really hone in on those requirements for that performance outcome of your machine, which will make your, you know, bindings that you just spent another $100 to shave some grams off perform that much better, because you're actually paying attention to, again, the human, not the hardware. And that's the piece that we're really, that's our breakthrough. And we're doing it with future technologies, just like anything else. I mean, if you looked at technologies from the 70s, which is when a lot of the core performance apparel technologies were created, I mean, think of your car or your phone or your computer or anything else from the 70s. You know, that's the same era of technology that we still live with daily in our performance apparel. And so it's
absolutely, yeah,
you know, it's just the world has moved on, but for some reason the performance outdoor market has remained not only kind of stagnant, but actually, because of environmental regulations, performance has actually degraded over that time. So, you know, the way we make things, the just the general make and look and feel is way better. The manufacturing technologies are better, but the materials that go in are still in many cases the same or degraded since they were invented.
That's fascinating. So that's, you say all that. I mean, I love you know, what you're talking about, and Artelect sounds really interesting, and the ACES system there, because it's like when you're, you know, I guess if you're split boarding, you're doing multi days out of a, you know, base camp or hut to hut, whatever, you're, it sort of pulls on a few of the kind of ultra running things that, you know, to do with nutrition, hydration, and putting stuff back into your body that you use up. And basically, the less you sweat, the more you retain this, you know, the stuff you need. And the hotter you get, the more water you need to drink, and the more, you know, energy you're burning. And so you need to be bringing more fuel. So if you can really, really regulate, you can, you know, I find this over the, you know, loads and loads of races over the last years, it's amazing how efficient you can get yourself. Yeah. And that equals safety. It means you're making better decisions in, you know, in the outdoors.
Yeah.
You're going to get on with your compadres better, because you're all, there's a good vibe and everybody's in control of what's happening, and, or the opposite, you know?
Yeah.
I think it has 100% knock on.
And you just said it, it's like hydration. Like, well, if you don't sweat out all your fluids, then you don't need to replace them as often.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, because perspiration comes from the blood. It sucks it right out of your blood into, you know, through your skin to try to cool you down. Well, you know what, if your body doesn't feel like it's overheated, then your natural biomechanical system regulates it for you. So that's, again, you know, our goal, keep you as close to this temperature you are right now as possible, from getting out of the car to the up, to the transition, to the down, to the repeat, to the backcountry hut, where you don't have to hang your merino base layer overnight in hopes of drying it out, right?
Yeah.
We have better technologies now than the way merino's been done forever and ever, that dries as fast as, you know, or as close to as fast as a synthetic is, sure, as you need. And so, you know, start there. Start
and
next
merino
to
doesn't stink, stink what, right?
Not yeah, and what can we do? What can we do to, and that's what actually the funny thing, Artelect, the name is just short for artificial intellect. It's just combined. And the whole thought process when I was kind of coming up with this after my frustration of many decades in doing things the way the market tells you have to do them. You know, I wanted to create something where let's focus, regardless of how hard it will be, let's focus on, let's start with the performance need. Then let's see what technologies we can use to align those with the body to get this performance outcome we're looking for. They may exist, they may not exist. In a lot of cases, they didn't. If they don't, create them, test them, vet them, make sure that this is true, and then charge what it costs. You know, instead of using sort of the old school mentality of price point in the marketplace, margin need for the retailer, margin need for the brand, and that is the amount that you can then spend on the product. That's just how it works. The way we did it is, let's take the performance need, figure out what we have to spend on the product, you know, if it could be this much, it could be this much, and then charge what it costs. But the thing about that, so we're not the cheapest brand by that's not who we're for. We're not supposed to be the cheapest brand. We're the most performance driven brand. But just like any other technology, better, later, newer technologies aren't always more expensive. In fact, you can sometimes do a lot more with a lot less. And so what we found that, you know, our top end shell, yeah, it's $650, you know, which isn't the cheapest thing in the marketplace, but I can actually provide a performance value relationship that's significantly beyond what I could ever do before at $900, you know, $1,000 in US retail price points, just because those newer technologies, I can deliver a much higher performance with a lot less maybe built-in overhead that the market sort of built itself over years. I mean, I look at it, and this is another sort of thing that I maybe oversay within my crew, but the thought process of Artelect was, you know, if you're going to start a car company in 2023, you're not going to start with a gas engine, right? For us, if you're going to start a performance apparel brand 2021 or whenever we start it, let's not start with the gas engine. Let's start with the EV mentality. What is out there? What's next? And to tie it all back to what the name is, you know, that artificial intellect, sort of artificial intelligence mentality, where anytime you put something on, it starts thermoregulating, managing moisture, doing the things with some actual intelligence there. Not technology that you have to plug in or power up somehow, always on. But for us, you know, we start with our new yarn technology in base layer, our next to skin merino products. And those are intended that the second you put them on, they start working the way nature intended them to, because it's merino, to create that sort of microclimate on against your skin that does exactly what you're saying, where you're able to actually maybe not perspire to a point where you need to continuously hydrate, right? You know, I'm not making claims here, but these things, you know, we have stuff out in the field. We've had people testing a lot of our product. I mean, we won in first year, we won Backcountry Magazine here in the US, the editor's choice for our base layer. You guys probably follow Backcountry Magazine. Their tests are real, and they're testing against every brand out in the marketplace. And here we were, year one, brand nobody's ever heard of, and we came in, we took editor's choice for our base layer. You know, we were a top pick in Ski Magazine Germany, you know, just like American brands don't win a lot of German awards. You know, it's just these things are things that we can hang our hat on, because the technology it's not us saying it, it's just science. Like the things that we put in are provable in lab environments and they're provable out in the space. We just had so if you're talking about ultras, I was just looking, we did a post, David Harvey. I don't know if you know that name. I don't know if he's famous or not. He ran something,
I don't know.
This Spartathon Ultra in Athens. Oh no, that's his next race. There was something in the UK he did. The UK's longest.
Oh, the Sparta up in Scotland.
The longest ultra underground race. And
not
he finished. I don't know what it's. I'll just
Is it the one through the tunnel?
Not totally sure.
One through the tunnel, or there's a Sparta.
I need to know more because I just found out about this. He just bought one of our shirts. Yeah. We do summer product as well.
Okay.
He bought one of our New Yarn t-shirts off the rack. Literally, we didn't send it to him. It was 170 miles or 200 miles. He finished it in 48 hours, 47 minutes, and he won the race. And he gave a lot of the credit to the t-shirt, the New Yarn t-shirt.
There you go.
No, honestly, amazing. He said this t-shirt was magic. It That's was amazing. Only after 170 miles that I needed to put on a jacket. He was warm and snug throughout, even through the night.
I can't wait to try one.
We're wearing dry robes and beanie hats. Like he was wearing a t-shirt. And you know what? That's a, you know, t-shirts are not usually performance equipment. But for us, again, that's just what we do all day, every day. Just bringing technology and leveraging it for user benefit. And when we look at that from, you know, coming back to kind of split board, backcountry skiing, that kind of thing, it's exactly that. We have a very specific set of levels of ACES based on what you're trying to accomplish and different variations for temperature variables within. But at the end of the day, all we're trying to do is keep your body as close to body temperature as possible so you can perform, not only perform better, but also be more comfortable, of course, because comfort is actually a performance benefit, and be safe at the same time. And so we're just taking a very holistic view of the way we create products and the way they work in tandem together to have that performance outcome. And it's just something, again, for me, it's been my lifetime of being in an apparel industry and performance apparel industry of things I've learned over the years. So we're a very new brand, but we have a totally different sort of take on it. And then you marry that with this sort of punk rock DIY attitude of not being afraid to take the right risks.
Mm.
And that's where Artelec currently sits.
Sounds very cool. I can't wait to try your merino out.
Yeah.
And then when you're experimenting then with a new fabric, are you going through multiple versions before you get to the finished article?
For the most part, we are. Everything we've done, but again, it's not maybe try something and make a jacket and sell it and let the public sort it out. These are things that I've been working on. I mean, so from my career path, I went from the snowboard thing completely to working with the parent company and with Fjällräven and that crew to being the global head of product for Mountain Hardware and then coming in and revamping the apparel program for Black Diamond. So these are things and many brands in between.
Yeah, yeah.
This is all stuff that's been an evolution. So this isn't like, oh, I've got a great idea. I'm going to do a Kickstarter and try some new shit out. Like we as a team and I've particularly been working on these products for decades in many cases and on iterative performance gains over that time. The New Yarn stuff, it's really interesting because it's not the fiber that's different because it's merino. It's the method of making the yarns. It's a totally different way of making yarn. And so down to the machines that we utilize working with New Yarn to create these products. And again, knowing the intended outcome and what I'm trying to achieve and being a user myself and a pretty hardcore user in a lot of cases, knowing on the front end what the parameters are and what we're trying to solve a problem. What's the equation to solve that problem? And so even from a base layer perspective, what do we do again, to start that efficient process of moving moisture and not, and using it too. You know, you, your body sweats for a reason. You're sweating because you want to cool down. If you move it all away instantly, your body just keeps sweating, right? Because it's not cooling. It's not doing what sweat is intended to do. So you, you've got to, you know, there's, you have to be very mindful that you're not solving one problem and causing another. You know, what is the right amount of moisture that you need in that system for your body to not feel, your body will also just keep perspiring if it's too dry. And in a lot of cold, you know, Colorado, super, super dry, right? Incredibly dry environment and yeah, pretty cold a lot of times. I mean, you guys have been to Silverton, stand in that parking lot in the morning, right? And so that combination of ultra cold, ultra dry also dries your skin to a point where it's starting, where it will just naturally perspire more to protect the skin. So again, you don't want to steal it all away. You want to, there's so many mechanics that are important. We did, you know, some of the early testing actually with the 10th Special Forces group here in Colorado on some of the NEARN iterations that we did. So actually we're not a military brand, but we work with in military application of some of these technologies. We're working right now with the US Air Force in a big, big study testing our complete apparel system versus the sort of standard issue cold weather apparel system. We're about to go into that, and you know, we're intending to show, and nobody's really ever done this in apparel because it's really expensive to do and you need like a government to do it, and the right environmental chambers and all these things. So we're going to you know, go head to head with what we feel is valid and right versus kind of what the state of the market is, and actually go sort of head to head and vet those against each other. So I'll learn a lot through that process too. I mean, we're not, you know, nothing we're doing is magic. It's iterative based on the best technologies and just a root level, gut level sense of knowledge of what we're trying to accomplish. And so, you know, again, it's just a different way of approaching the market. And there haven't been a lot of brands because the market has become such a weird beast, and things like minimum orders and all these things. It's very hard to be a performance apparel company unless you find those efficiencies that everybody else has sort of found. So to buck the market, buck the system, and sort of do it our own way has been an interesting ride so far. So fear, failure, success, we're on the fear, or does it go fear, success? How does it go?
Fear, failure, success.
Okay, so the fear part, I'm not fearful anymore that we're doing the right thing. You know, we've failed along the way. There's a lot of things we've already done wrong. Trial and error. We've never really failed with the product. We've failed with maybe the way we've set up the brand and what we thought the world needed and wanted from us. And, you know, we're really hoping to, you know, and I feel we're on the edge of a successful outcome of people understanding what we're doing and really taking the leap to try a brand they've never heard of at a price point that maybe is, you know, at the better side of the market. But, you know, again, we're not asking them to be the test subjects because we've done a lot of testing, a lot of vetting. We've had product in the field, even if it wasn't our brand. I've had product that I've been working on for ever and ever. So again, it's a trajectory of knowledge to outcome, not just this sounded fun, let's do it. You know, there's a lot more that goes into it than that.
Oh, that's brilliant. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, Trent. Maybe we should wrap it up. There was a nice succinct way that you brought in fear, failure, success there. so yeah, I mean, we wish you all the best. I mean, I've had your jacket on. I've not been in the mountains yet with it, but I mean, only the Scottish ones in the summer, and you know, everything was working brilliantly. So you know, I'm already a convert.
Okay, cool. Well, I'd look forward to. I'd love to get you guys some base layer, and I'd love your honest
Totally.
Opinion. You know, go out there and
totally
tell me what broke.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Zach, if you're someone who's going to be running, you know, for 6 days in a row, then Zach's your man.
Yeah. Send me your sizes. Let's do this.
Oh, wicked.
Done.
If we're ever in Boulder, we'll look you up.
You have to. And let me just say one quick thing to you guys. I really appreciate what you're doing, especially for snowboarding in general, that you're really supporting it and your vision and view of what it can be and should be. So you guys do a valuable service, and I will continue to keep listening to every podcast as we go.
Thank you, Trent. What a pleasure.
Cool.
Lovely to meet you. Cheers.
Okay, talk soon.
Bye.